Alright guys, welcome back to another episode of The Soul Season. I have a sleeping baby right here on my legs. So if this baby wakes up at some point, just know that this episode would be late. I don't know guys. But yeah, welcome back to another episode of The Soul Season. This is Nini, or Nani, depending on when and where you met me. I'm so glad you're here. This episode would be for anyone who feels like everything is taking too long. Like, the prayer isn't being answered. Like, the healing isn't happening fast enough. Like, the dream is just a dream. And that situation, the situationship is taking too long to situate itself. Still. To this day, after 2 years. Or if you just ever whispered, like, God, did you forget about me? I'm gonna dedicate this episode to you, because I don't think you're being forgotten. I think you're in refinement. Today's scripture is from the book of Habakkuk, chapter 2, verse 3. And, honestly, I don't know if you guys can hear me, and I won't know until I go back and listen. But yeah. So, like I said, chapter 2, verse 3 of the book of Habakkuk, which says, though it linger, wait for it. It will certainly come and will not delay. And I just want to emphasize that though it may linger, it will come. It won't be late, not by God's standards, not by his stopwatch. I think that we live in a world of microwavable miracles. Like, everybody expects something to happen so fast, because like this world, especially this generation, has been like, I'm not sure what the word I'm looking for, but like, it's like they try to, you know, find instant affirmation. Like, they look for it, we look for it as a generation. But yeah, I have a special guest here today. Everyone say hi to Addie.
Hi guys.
So today's episode I want to surround around God being like this slow burn type of God, for real guys, and just finding rest in the waiting period. I think that the slow burn is still sacred, and we need to recognize that. I think God is a slow burn kind of God. I think he loves a good slow burn, just like me, for real. He doesn't rush. He doesn't panic. He builds deep in a foundation before he builds high. And I think that he works in the way even when we can't feel it. So if you hear snoring, once again, I have a baby on my lap who is just slumped. I promise you guys, I'm going to get those like little microphones that can noise cancel out everything else. From the TikTok shop eventually, guys. I will get them. We're just saving up for more important things at the moment. But Addie, I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. Have you ever experienced a time where it felt like you were forgotten and there was some work that needed to be done? On you, or maybe on the situation. And if so, like, what helped you hold on during that season?
Okay, so for me, I would say my sophomore year of high school, we went through a little rough patch in terms of the romance department. You know, Lord, the situation at the time had cut things off. and it was really hard on me. That was my first, like, thing that I've ever had. So it was like, what's going on with me? Like, what am I doing? So it was just a big reflection period for me in terms of everything, even with my friendships, even with, you know, what I was doing outside of just, like, the romantic aspect. And I would say a big thing was patience. 'Cause I would say I've always been big on patience, but this was a really testing time in terms of that. 'Cause it was always me asking myself and, like, the universe, like, show me, you know, what I'm doing. Show me, like, what am I doing wrong? What am I? But then I feel like once I got out of that whole, like, me, like, very, like, interlooking stuff, and once I really took a bird's eye view look at everything, it gave me more perspective on the situation. It gave me more insight, not only to myself, but on how others think and view things. And I feel like that was a big part of, like, who I am now. Sophomore year in general was just a big part, but I feel like that in particular kind of, like, set everything off in terms of that. And I feel like I still look back on that moment and, like, I can still, like, reflect heavily because of that. Yeah. And I feel like a lot of the ways I, like, cope with things now is very reflective on that time in my life. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, it definitely shows, like, watching you navigate through that situation, and multitudes of situations, because let's be real, bro, the first 2 years of your high school experience were out to get you, for real. Like, you would think, for a COVID freshman and sophomore, like, that's me, though. Like, you think that would be it, but Addie was going through the trenches, for real, guys. And just to see her, like, flourish throughout that, and gain patience and understanding, has just really been a gift for me, because, like, it's just something to learn from, really. But yeah, speaking of your freshman year, which is my junior year in high school. Let's talk about the Addams Family.
Oh, Lord.
And my character of Alice Winicky. Guys, so if you're not familiar with the Addams Family musical, basically Wednesday falls in love with this guy that she met in a park, for real, and they decide, absolute rando, and they decide, let's get married. But before then, already we're proposed, like, he proposed and was like, marry me right now, and she was like, yeah. And then right after, she's like, actually, wait, you have to meet my family and I have to meet yours. And so that's what they do. They set up a dinner to be had at the Addams Mansion, and everything just goes wrong, like, left and right. People are poisoned, people being Alice, and by accident, because Alice was not the one that was the poison being aimed for, but the poison is pretty much just like a truth serum of sorts, and Alice had been harboring these feelings of just angst. Just angst against her husband Mal, because their son is, like, grown, like, he's about to leave the nest, obviously, like, you know, he's about to be married, out of the house, and lo and behold, the spark in their relationship, Alice and Mal, the spark in their relationship is just gone, and Alice was not, yeah, shout out Dominic, bro, like, stop. You know what? Shout out to Kat, for real. That one show that she did where she, like, slammed her hands on there and made me think that I actually, like, hit her head. But I was like, oh, stop. I could not break character. So I just, like, grabbed her. She played Fester. So I grabbed her bald white head and I just pressed a kiss to it. Because that's all I could do. But Anywho, so all of her angst gets released into this song that is named Waiting. And I hated the aftermath of me singing this song. Like, the tone is quirky and dramatic, but, like, Alice is singing things of, like, waiting and wailing, whining and waning, wanting and wasting, and whoa. Like, Shawty is waiting. This is literally the last part of the song, but it's, like, waiting for a lousy, rotting, vicious, rancid, fetid, frenzied, fatal death. Like, she is exaggerating to the max, bro. But that's sometimes just how waiting feels sometimes, like, right? Like, you're caught between what was and what hasn't arrived, and in that stretch of time, hope just starts to feel really heavy. Like, it's an added weight into that. And so, Addy, knowing that you love to sing this song to me to torture me of my past, here's a new question. Why do you think waiting can feel so lonely, even when we know that, like, the light of the end of the tunnel is there?
Oh my gosh, great question. And you know what? Shout out to my vocals, because I'm telling you, love that song. I feel like, because to answer your question, I feel like waiting is such a personal thing. I feel like a lot of people, when, you know, in waiting, they expect a lot, and they, you know, want a lot. And like you said, we're like, this generation, we're very fast paced, we want immediate results. Yeah. And so I feel like when waiting is supposed to be, is, you know, a personal journey, a personal, like, you use that time to fill up on, you know, reflection periods. Yeah. And looking inwards and looking outwards, you know, bird's eye view, like I said earlier. But I feel like for a lot of us, it feels very isolating because we're doing such, like, reflection. And for those who are more on the fast track of life, I feel like that loneliness doesn't hit them until later. So then it's 10 times worse. You're getting hit like a truck. So it's like, damn, like, I didn't take that time to really, like, reflect like I wanted to. Because I feel like when you reflect off jump in that waiting period, you know, it's like you expect a little loneliness to come with that, because that's just life. But I feel like when you're trying to fill your head with other things within this waiting period, it's like, oh, you get hit with that loneliness and it hits you like a truck. And now it feels 10 times worse, and you feel like it's almost a burden on you. And I feel like what a lot of people in our generation could really learn from is taking that time to, like, sit in your silence. I know a lot of therapists will always tell their patients, like, sit in that silence, sit in that uncomfortability, because that's how you'll learn, that's how you reflect. And without that, you get a lot of people jumping to things very fast because they think, oh, like, this is it, that's what I want. But so, like, big thing, relationships, people will jump into relationships real fast because they think, oh, well, this was the light at the end of the tunnel, this was my sign. But in reality, that's not what they really want. And I feel like a lot of those people don't take that time, because when you really truly reflect and look inwards, you know what you want eventually. Yeah. You get to that point where you're like, no, this isn't what I want. I want this instead of that. So no, yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. I think that's why it feels so lonely, especially for us newer gen kids. So yeah.
I can totally place myself in that situation, 'cause I have, you know, gotten into a relationship way before, and there are, like, so many signs of being like, don't do this, please do not do this, don't spell his name in this house. But yeah, no, like, it had been so many signs of, like, just don't do it. Like, there's no way that anything that you get out of this relationship will be good for you. And truth be told, it wasn't. It just was not. Like, nothing about that relationship felt good, even though, like, truth be told, the relationship really lasted for a day, because I, like, I locked it. I was like, girl, you do not need or want this relationship. This relationship is not going to turn out well for you. You're going to stay in this relationship, and then you're going to hate yourself for staying in this relationship, and it's just going to be just so bad. You're not going to want that. But yeah, so, like, I can definitely understand just, like, the want to connect to a whole nother person in that light, and then how, because of the want for connection, you kind of forget to, like, react and to, there's a word I'm looking for, and just to, like, do, like, a pause and think, like, just stop and think about it for a second. But yeah.
As Meacham would say, people have not been metacognitive.
People have not been metacognitive. Shout out to Meacham for real. So love her. Like, that is my favorite English teacher. I don't care. Her and Espinosa were the goats, bro. They're hilarious. But, like, yeah, like, waiting can feel so lonely. And, bro, like, tell me why my mind just went to the male loneliness epidemic. But no, like, waiting can feel so lonely, and I think, like, it is due to the fact that we expect, you know, instantness of, like, connection to connect to other people, and it's the want of connection to people, after being connected, I hate to say it, but, like, to these devices and to, sorry, y'all, she just, like, slammed her phone down on the couch, oh my gosh, but no, like, I think that because of it being the digital age right now, like, we're all, like, parents hand their children iPads immediately as soon as they, like, can comprehend these words for real. They're getting dangerous. Like, you take an iPad away from a 2-year-old nowadays, they will haunt you. They will hunt you down, bro. They start like, they literally start tweaking. They start tweaking, and I just think that, like, human connection is so important. And I was talking to Dom about this recently, too. But human connection is so important, and I think that we just forgot all about it once these phones and these, you know, like, you did, okay. Trinity, like, there's no way. Like, she is Dolly Parton. She is working 9 to 5. What a way to make a living, like... But no, y'all, like, I just think we need to take more time, like, or understand that things will take time and understand why things take time. Like, I think there's something so holy about, like, delay. Like, there's something so sacred about it. And sometimes it's not, like, a no, it's just a not yet. Like, I think for me, it's like, sometimes God is just saying, like, if I gave it to you now, it would crush you, but like, you would not know how to handle that. You could not handle all that, for real, gang. Like, please just sit down and just let me build you up. Like, if I build you up first, girl, like, if I get you this aspect in life and I give you this aspect in life, not only will you be able to handle that, but that thing would be carrying you to whatever step I'm telling you to go to next. Like, I just feel like there's so many, like, specifically in the Bible, there's, like, so much waiting going on, and God, I love you, but, like, if you were to put me in any situation like David or Sarah or Joseph or even Jesus, like, I couldn't do it. I really couldn't. Like, what do you mean? Like, for David, he was anointed king in his teens and couldn't even wear the crown for real for another decade, more than a decade. We're like, Sarah, girl, I waited 2 years for one. I cannot wait decades for a man. I refuse. I absolutely refuse. That woman waited decades for Isaac, and I just feel like all this waiting, not for me. Like, Jesus didn't start, like, his ministry. Oh, hold on, y'all. be calm, Trinity, be calm. But yeah, no, Jesus didn't start his ministry for a whole 30 years. Granted, that is from birth to 30, but like, why couldn't he start when he was like 12? Like, I feel like if Jesus wasn't in a rush, why am I in a rush? Why is anyone in a rush? Like, maybe we're not waiting for the promise. Maybe the promise is waiting for us, you know, to grow into it. Is there like any character, like, I'm not sure how familiar you are with the Bible, but like, just like, okay, no, that's fine, that's fair. For me personally, my character is Sarah, because Shoddy was locked in so much. Like, I can't do that, but like, I have done that just on a very, very small scale compared to her. Okay, there's no reason to be feisty right now. That we know is not needed. But yeah, no, like, is there just any character or even just a person in your life whose waiting season has encouraged you to be more patient? Or like, what part of their journey speaks to you the most?
Okay, so like, calm little shout out, but I would say my history teacher, Mr. Taylor.
I love that man.
I have known this man since my freshman year, and literally, he is the most calmest spirit I know. And a big part of that was him waiting. It was a lot of waiting. He started his own business. That's a lot of waiting. Yeah. He, you know, went through a lot within that business that he told me about that I'm not going to share on the internet, because that's his business, but not mine. But he went through a lot of waiting with that. And then, you know, he went back to school after being in school for a whole another 4 years to become a teacher. Better than me. Like, he just does so much waiting. He's in it for the long run. And even with his wife, like, him and his wife had dated for years. Years.
I remember that story that he told us about.
He was a messy man. And we love him for it, though. Like, he made his mistakes and he learned from them. And he wasn't afraid to sit in the silence. That's his big thing. Like, his thing is, you know, in life, you're always gonna, like, go through that turmoil. You're always gonna go through, like, those moments of, like, damn, am I really doing this for a good reason? Am I really doing this with a purpose? Yeah. And he's not afraid to, you know, reflect on that and be like, you know what? I'm probably not doing these for the right reasons. I'm not gonna do this. And, like, homeboy has bank, like, a lot of it. And a lot of that was...
I hope so, after seeing his tie collection forever.
He has... His wife won 50 mil in Vegas, guys. Like,
she,
or not 50 mil, but 50k. Sorry, guys.
50 mil?
Not no, like, he literally, oh, he does it for the love of the sports. Like,
Bo does it for the love of the game.
And that's even more patience. That's even more waiting. Like, he just teaches to teach. He teaches because he loves the kids. He teaches because he loves what he's doing. And I appreciate him so much for that. And guys, I fear I'm glazing this man, but I don't care. Like,
I did this for an assignment.
Yeah, don't know.
But glaze that man. Sat there and I was like, look, the reason I wanted to become a teacher in the whole first place is because I had two
It's okay.
Hello? I had two. They're not like that. I didn't need to use that word to like describe them for real. But no, like, I had two people who like were so locked in, and in their care for me as a student. I had my aunt, who was an educator, who would heavily influence me as a child, because I saw the way that she would treat her students, and like, she really cared hard for her kids. Mm-hmm. Like, if somebody showed up with like a shoe that like had a sole breaking, she would have glue ready to go. Like, she'd give the clothes off of her back if she could, like, literally, like, right off of. But then I met Mr. Taylor, and Mr. Taylor.
That's a real man.
That's Mr. Taylor is just literally so legit. Like, love that man.
I knew he was a real, I'm not gonna say that word, but I knew he was a real person for real when he was talking about high school relationships. And he's like, y'all are just playing house. Like, y'all are just playing house.
You know what? And that's true.
And he's so real for that. Because, listen, a lot of these fast-paced people are just playing house.
Literally, like, y'all think that this is a long relationship.
And what is 4 years? It can be. You truly learn how to grow with one another, like you do in a house.
A lot of us aren't doing that because, like I said, exactly. The human connection, they're not getting that. They're just like...
they're not fulfilled truly.
Like, there's a surface level to it. Mm-hmm. And I think that they just take that surface level and they refuse to go any deeper than that because they're afraid to show themselves who they are. And then also on top of that, show another person who they are.
It's a lot of work.
And yeah, like, I think they think it's a lot of work. And like I said, we're like a microwave society now. Like, everything needs to be fast paced. Otherwise, it's like, what's the point? Like, we're not getting results in a quick manner. Exactly. So I don't care. But yeah.
And I feel like on top of that, going back to, like, it's the digital age. You know, us as, like, you know, young adults, older teenagers, young adults, are so susceptible. Yeah, right word.
Okay.
They're so, you know, we see a lot of, you know, these relationship goals and, like, oh, like, me and my partner have been together since, you know, freshman year and we're going on our 30s, like... I feel like it's a lot of not, you know, unattainable goals, just like these goals took years to get to and a lot of work and a lot of patience. Mm. And I feel like a lot of us don't have that, and not necessarily don't even have it, but like don't tap into it as much as we should to have such goals. And I feel like that's where a lot of people are like put at a halt because of that, you know? They see like, oh, like I want that. But they don't put the work in to have it. And like we said, microwave society, they want something quick. They want something that takes 5 minutes in relation to, you know, 5 years. And so, like, going back to it, like, Mr. Taylor, like, he's always told me, like, if you really truly want something, you have to be able to put in that work. You have to, like, genuinely want that thing. Mm. Like, you can't half-ass. Because when you, the moment you do that, it crumbles. Like, you can't have a good foundation built on, you know, half-made stone, poorly made stone. You have to have it on a good, solid, concrete foundation to truly build something great.
Yeah.
'Cause, you know, half-ass foundation, you're not getting a good, true structure. You know, as they would say, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day.
Yeah.
So I feel like he was a big person in my life to, like, tell me that and shake it into me. Because, you know, you can hear it as many times as you want, but if it's not, you know, if you're not practicing what you preach and if you're not, like, getting it, like, hit into you at all times, it's never really going to stick. And I feel like between him and my coach / advisor, Miss Edwards, like, both love Miss Edwards, because she was one of the first teachers to actually be like, Addie, you're a black woman in America, like, you need to lock in, because a lot of people are gonna look down upon you and a lot of people are gonna think you can't do it. Don't prove them right. So between those two, like,
I think, like, they were like, I don't say the angel and the devil. I think they were both angels.
Edwards in different ways.
No, like, honestly, with Edwards, it's like, she would also comfort me in the sense of, like, one day I was literally, like, I've told you the story, but, like, I was literally just in the corner and I was, like, so far into my head that I wasn't talking to people, didn't want to talk to people. I was just painting those stupid posters and trying to get out of this class. And Edwards came up to me. Mind you, Edwards had been in her, like, room and not in the studio room. She had been in her classroom for most of this day. And then she came in and, like, checked on everyone's posters. And as she was walking out, she looked down at me and she said, "Are you okay?" I was like, "Yeah, I'm okay." I was lying. And she recognized that immediately as any
person. She clocks it. She clocks it so fast.
"Are you okay?" And I was like, "Yeah, like, I'm okay." And she was like, "Okay. So why are you lying?" And I'm like, "Oh." So see what happened was, she's like, "No, like, be honest with yourself and be honest with me. Like, are you okay? Like, what's going on? Is there something I can do to help?" And we sat and we talked for a little bit. And at the end of that conversation, I had just felt like, what is the word I'm looking for? Like, rebooted.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was like a system reset for me.
Exactly. And
Taylor has that same effect, but in a different way.
Like he asks you questions to start thinking about yourself. Right. Like,
he's like, "So he's literally like a little mini therapist. Like how does that make you feel?"
Like, let's really reach in deep, you know? Literally. Like, what makes you think the way you think?
And I love that Taylor had been like a connected background character in my mm-hmm. life. There's prom pictures in junior year of me just locked in. And he's somewhere in the back of that picture.
Oh my
like,
God.
There's one, like, there's some that's not even at prom. Like, it's the year before. It's sophomore year.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow he was connected.
He wasn't there freshman year. Or your sophomore year. He wasn't there for you. His first year was my freshman year. Which is crazy, I know.
And who the...
Was it Shalonga?
It probably was Shalonga. But all I saw was like, I saw the hair and I was like, "That's Taylor."
No. Yes.
Yeah. It's not Taylor. Okay, cool. But like, at least early junior year, it was like freshman orientation and we're doing Stugo stuff.
It probably
was. I'm just
like
looking around and I'm like,
"Why are you here?
Why is that man in the back of this picture?" Like, and then it'll be like, just every like bigger event that I had, mm-hmm. he's somewhere in there. Like, For guys, like, when I say that Mr. Taylor is so cool, bro, like, he literally dressed up as Jack Skellington for our homecoming, because the homecoming theme that I chose was Nightmare Before Christmas, because it was October.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, like, this is the only one that's gonna make sense, guys. Like, work with me, help y'all. And everyone had been like taking pictures with this man. And dancing with this man.
Turns out
it's Mr. Taylor. And I didn't even find out till later that year that it was him. Like, I did not know until like after Christmas, for real. And I looked and I was like, he was talking about something. He was like, he brought up the fact that he bought the costume. I was like, "Why did you buy the costume?" He's like, "Because I dressed up as..." And I was like, "That was you." "That was you." Like, he's so locked in. He like literally just does it for the love of the game. Like, there's no reason. He doesn't want the kids to, like, be like, "That's my favorite teacher."
Yeah.
He just happened to become our favorite teacher because of the stuff that he does. But he doesn't do it for that reason. Like, he literally just does it because he's a silly, goofy guy.
Like, he's just a nerd that likes history, guys. Because I've had the honor to have him not only as a club sponsor, now for this entire podcast.
Oh, so that's no, yes. Gang, like, I think we spent like a good 14 minutes just on this. Mind you, I said that each episode of this series was going to be like 20, 25 minutes. We're at 33. So we're gonna cut off the Mr. Taylor glaze right now.
Sorry,
but like, if you gave us the opportunity, we could really talk about this man for an hour. But yeah, like, Mr. Taylor, if you ever happen to come across this podcast, just know me and Addie love you greatly. And you are really inspiring. I'll probably send you that letter that I had to write for my EDF 200 class. But yeah, back to the topic. Let me check my notes, guys. Let's shift gears.
This could be an extra long episode.
No, literally, we might get to 45 to an hour. Already, I knew it was going to be a little long, but I didn't think it was going to be like this long. But like, let's talk about resting, because like I said, I want this to surround rest, and like, not the kind of that 2-hour nap that we took today. Mind y'all, we did not need to sleep for 2 hours. It was supposed to be a quick 1 hour max, and we were slumped. My mommy cooked oxtail and rice, and that put me to sleep, y'all. Like, real bad. Best sleep of my life, but, like, still. But yeah, like, not the type of, like, little quick naps and face mask and spa days, but, like, we're the kind of rest where you have to release your grip on control. Like, the kind where you trust in God to carry whatever it is that is too heavy for you while you get the chance to breathe. And I think that in this day and age, we confuse waiting with wasting. Like, I feel like we think that resting is wasting time, and that's not true. It's literally a form of worship. Like, God would never give us a Sabbath day if he didn't want us to rest. That is literally what it's for. And resting doesn't mean, like, oh, I should do nothing at all. Like, literally do whatever is restful to you. Like, if you find peace in, like, painting or singing or cooking or cleaning, like, literally just do that. It's not wasted time. It's spiritual discipline. Like, it just, I think that rest basically just says, like, I'm not God, and there is literally no pressure on me to be God. Like, I don't have to be God, because there is a God. I'm literally just here. Mm-hmm. You can rest without quitting. You can wait without worrying. Like, God is doing something slow. When he does something slow, it's often because he's doing something that takes the time to build, to be strong. And so, like, I just feel like you just have to trust that when he's working, you can wait. Like, and I know you don't have a strong relationship with, like, religion or anything, but I know that you are somewhat spiritual.
Yeah.
So, like, what has relationship with rest looked like in your journey of, like, any faith? Like, do you find it easy or hard to release control? And, like, what outlets do you have? In your spiritual journey.
Okay, guys. So, as Nini did say, I'm not a religious girl. But, you know, I think I'm very, I guess, earthy's not a word, but whatever. I do believe, like, in a way, like,
you could really just say spiritual.
Yeah, spiritual. Yeah, earthy, spiritual. Earthy, spiritual. I believe the universe works in crazy ways, but I feel like for me, rest has always been a hard thing to kind of get a grasp on, especially in my earlier years of, like, high school and, like, adapting to that. I'm one that I don't like to sit with myself. I feel like, just in general, I'm a very, like, outgoing and, like, extroverted person. So when I do have time to sit with my thoughts and sit with anything, to be honest, I'm just like, ooh, it's uncomfortable. Which, obviously, I said earlier, like, you have to be able to sit in that uncomfortability, which I've locked in on a bit more as I've gotten older with age. But I feel as like...
you've gotten older with age.
Oh my God, shut up. You know what I meant. Anywho. Sorry, guys. As I was saying, but in terms of, like, being able to let go of situations and being able to let go of, like, a lot of things in general, like, even with people, I feel like I've always struggled with it. Not sure why. I've always tried to think about that because, like, I feel like I'm a type of person, like, I always try to see the other person's point of view, even if they're hurting me. And even if I know that it's not the healthiest way to go, like, I always want to make things work. And so really, like, releasing my grip on stuff like that has always been a struggle for me. it does usually work out in the end, but I feel like as I've gotten older, a big thing for me is being able to disconnect, and being able to, you know, find distance, not even just cut off and, like, lose grip entirely, but to put, like, the ball back in my court and being able to just be like, you know what, like, you're doing your own thing and I'm gonna do mine. If you so choose to come back into my ballpark, like, do what you do, but I need to be able to.
Classic Addy statement.
Sorry, guys. If you know me, if you know
do
me,
what you do.
Do what you do is my favorite line ever. But I feel like I said, being able to, like, have them do what they do, I do what I do, like, because I'm gonna practice what I preach. If I'm telling you to do what you do, like, I'm definitely gonna, you know, do my own thing. So I feel like, with that being said, just being able to, like, find, being able to disconnect and, like, distance, rather than, you know, taking that time and fully cutting stuff off. I don't snip things in the bud. So, like, yeah, how about you, Nene?
Low-key, I forgot what question I asked.
How do you, how do you work with rest? How do you,
hold on.
Yeah,
sorry, guys. I, like, had a mini jump scare because I thought the baby was going to wake up.
That's scary.
But, yeah, I think that with my relationship with rest, I kind of just believed I didn't deserve it. And then I heard a sermon. And I can't remember who gave the sermon. I'm pretty sure it was Pastor B. Who knows, bro? Like, honestly, all at this point, I just know that with that sermon, it kind of just woke me up. Like, you can ask any of my friends, specifically any of my friends from church, honestly, of, like, how I just felt like I didn't deserve a rest day. Like, if you ask anyone that went to mission with me, I just kind of struggled with feeling worthy of rest, because it was just like, I have so much things that I need to take care of. Like, I need to take care of my mom, I need to take care of my sisters, I need to be sure that my friends are okay, like, need to be sure that my friends' mentals are okay, need to be sure that, like, anyone that I'm living with is at peace with whatever's going on in our apartment. Like, I felt the need to be nitpicky and controlling of everything, but not in, like, a everything has to go my way, more in a, like, I need to be sure everyone's okay with everything, otherwise I will explode kind of way. And I think that as I grew stronger in my faith, and as I continue to do so, it's getting easier to be like, okay, this isn't mine to control. I can only control these small things, but this outer circle of things, I have no control over that. And outside of that bigger circle is an even bigger circle of things that no one has control over. And yeah, like, I just feel like after recognizing that, like, I can only control so much, and outside of that, it's not my responsibility, it became easier to release control over things. But yeah, to be real, sometimes slow can feel so brutal. Like, it feels silent. I start thinking to myself, like, am I being punished? Did I miss something? Am I not good enough for something yet? But I just came to the conclusion that, like, I'm not being punished, I'm being prepared. And slowness doesn't mean rejection, and silence doesn't mean absence. It's just conditioning. Like, it's a spiritual conditioning. It's stretching your faith, it's stretching your patience, your ability to walk not by sight but by trust. And I just recognize that sometimes we're in the in-betweens, but the in-between is where becoming kind of lives, I guess. And there's this song in Hamilton called Wait For It. Mm-hmm. And I am the one thing in life I can control. It's sung by Aaron Burr, who's kind of watching everything pass him by and excel past what he is in life. And he says to himself in the song of like, I am the one thing in life I can control. I am inimitable. I am an original. Like, I'm not falling behind or running late. I'm not standing still. I am lying in wait. And I remember hearing that line recently after doing a sing-along with my little sister. But like, sometimes that's exactly how I feel with God. Like, to sit there and recognize that I'm not falling behind. I'm not standing still. I'm just sitting here and I'm waiting. And waiting isn't weakness. And I feel like we... Ooh. Hush up. But yeah. Waiting isn't weakness. It's like powerful. It's a position of power. Sorry, guys. When you have rooted your waiting in a purpose. Burr didn't always wait with trust, but you can. You know, like, you can sit and be waiting, and you can sit and be trusting, and those two things can coexist at the same time. Because you know who holds the outcome at the end of the day. No one's rushing you besides yourself. So you don't have to rush God or feel rushed by him. So next question for Addie is just, what's something you've learned in your in-between seasons? Like, how has waiting changed how you view yourself?
For me, I feel like I realized in those in-between seasons that, like, I have a lot of pent-up anger. You know, it's a thing that, like, I hate recognizing a lot of the time, because low-key, it's embarrassing, like, having, like, a lot of anger, and not so much envy, just, like, I feel like an annoyance, almost, with the world, and, like, sometimes with the people around me that I don't show as often, because I feel like it is a big burden on other people, especially...
You say sometimes you feel wrathful.
You're gonna... I'm not gonna say that on the podcast, but you know what? Sometimes, I just feel like it's very, like, you know, annoying when it's like, it, like, things have passed already. It's like, you should have brought that up when it happened, but I don't, because I feel like I don't like being a nuisance to others, and I don't like going out of my way to start issues. But within that in-between season, I've had to learn that it's okay to stir the pot a bit. It's okay to, you know, not wreak havoc, but challenge, yes, other people's perspectives, and, like, take that time to be like, hey, no, actually, this is what it actually was. Like, I'm not messing with that. Because, you know, in the long term, me holding in that anger is doing nothing for anybody else. Especially recently, very recently.
Do I know what this is
about? No. Okay. I don't think I told you about this. But I recently, like, realized that I have a lot of pent-up anger with my mother. Mm. And that was a big thing that I've had to come to realize, because, guys, everybody knows, not everybody knows, but, like, my mom ended up moving to California my freshman year. And she obviously still visits, and she's still very active in my life, but my dad was taking care of us majority of that time. And I feel like in that in-between time, that time that, like, my mom wasn't there, I had to realize, like, she doesn't really know me. Like, obviously I'm her child, she knows me to an extent, but she wasn't there for that time, those times where I'm tweaking out about a friendship and where I'm just like questioning everything. So realizing that I do have that like anger and almost resentment towards those little moments built up into something that I didn't think was, you know, possible. And with that in between time, I had to realize like it's okay to feel that way. Like my feelings are valid. Because at the end of the day, like they're my feelings. But just working through that and working through friendships has been a big thing in the in-between time that, like, I don't tolerate people because, you know, that's my thing. I'm internalizing it a lot at the moment. But, yeah, I would say those were the biggest things that I've had to look towards.
That's fair. And I can really relate to, like, something you said earlier that just kind of disappeared from my brain, apparently. But overall, just like learning to be patient in the in-betweens and just kind of understanding how waiting can be important, of just learning to be okay with things. I'm kind of on the opposite end of everything. I want so badly to be okay with any father figure I've ever had in my life. But it's just, I feel wronged. I feel like my mom was wronged and that she didn't deserve to be. And I feel vengeful for her. And I think that kind of carried with me for a while because I wanted to prove that we didn't need them. And I wanted to hurt them. Like, I physically, emotionally, I wanted them to hurt in some variety. And I think kind of coming to terms of, like, it's not mine to get that get back for my mother, nor is it even hers. Like, my mom claims just, like, the praying woman lifestyle. And whatever conversations she has with God, and whatever she asks of him is between the two of them. And if she asks for vengeance, then that's on her. But if she asks for forgiveness, or for forgiveness as an aspect to be placed on her heart, then that's also between them. Like, I just kind of have to wait and see. And I think with me, I had to, like, just pause and be like, okay, yeah. But yeah, let me see what else. Like, I kind of been reflecting and learning lately that I don't need to know, like, the full timeline. And I think that has also helped me, is that I don't need to know every aspect of my life, nor do I need to plan it out myself. And I know what conversation we had on the balcony earlier, and honestly, that's why I'm so open to the idea of just being like, it is what it is. Because if that is what God has in store for me, then that is what God has in store for me. And I don't need to know the how it happens as long as I have the who. I don't have to hustle to prove that I'm ready or outwork myself to prove my worth. I don't think God is asking me to run. I think he's just asking me to be restful and understand that what he's promised me is mine, so long as I stay a faithful disciple. And like I said, guys, I'm a good lover of the slow burn romance. Love a good slow burn. I mean, give me, you know, the pining, the yearning, the long stares across their rooms, the will they, won't they. Love it. But only as a book. I hate living it. I hate it. Like, give me a 20 chapter of just that. Like, I'm good. Like, yes, please. But living one in real life, hate it. Like, it's not cute. It's not fun. There's no, like, background characters. No, like, sweet music. No magical lightning. You are not a background character. In fact, I think you're a lead support. You're a lead support. But yeah, like, there's just nothing magical. Just a lot of what are we? And I thought I wanted a slow burn, but what I really want is clarity, I feel. And I think waiting on God can feel the same or similar at some points. Like, you think you're built for the process until the process starts feeling painful. And I think that what this season has taught me is just because you don't see the movement doesn't mean that nothing's happening. Just because it feels like really confusing doesn't mean it's not constructive. Just because it hurts you doesn't mean that it's not holy. And I think that's the beauty of the slow burn, for real. It's not about speed. It's about substance, and it's about building something that lasts, so that way when the answer finally comes, you'll be strong enough to carry it. So here's your soul prompt for this week. I asked a few questions. Pick one or answer them all. But where have I mistaken slowness for silence? Where have I rushed past my own healing? Where have I resented the almost? And lastly, where have I confused stillness with stagnation? Maybe it's your purpose. Maybe it's the next step that you haven't taken yet. Or maybe the next step hasn't shown up yet. Maybe it's a situationship you'll have to walk away from. Even if you don't have that closure, maybe you're grieving a version of a life that hasn't happened yet. But what if it's still working? What if God hasn't missed it? What if you're not behind and you're just becoming? So Addie, my last question for you today is, if you could tell someone who's in a season of deep waiting one thing, what would it be?
If I could tell them one thing, push through. Push through, strong shoulder. Soldier. There we go. I know that it's going to be a rough time. You're going to have moments where you feel like, I just want to jump into something. Like, you need something new. You need something fresh. And I'm here to tell you, no, snap out of it. Let's lock back in. You take that time. Take even longer time. Take more time than you think you need. Because I'm telling you, the more time you have to process and recollect and, you know, rejuvenate, it's the better. Think of it as a pot roast. Because I'm a big foodie. Think of it as a pot roast. Think of it as the longer you let that meat simmer, the better it gets. And you know what? I'm going to keep it short and simple. Like, that's it. And have the best healing journey ever. So, yeah, that's what I got to say.
Thank you, Addie. let us pray. You know, this is how we end it here on the soul season. God, remind me that you are never late. Help us to stop measuring progress by pacing. Help grow our patience, grow our peace, Lord. Teach us to rest while you're still working on us. Remind us that what you are doing in the dark will bloom in the light, and build us for what we are asking you for. Let us see your hand even when the harvest hasn't come yet, Lord God. Help us to trust your timing more than our timelines. And help us to choose rest, not because we are weak, but because we believe that you are strong, Lord God. And in your mighty name, I pray. Amen. If this episode spoke to you, share it with someone else who's in waiting. Someone who is tired of being strong, but is still trusting. Share it to someone who needs to hear that you're not late, you're not forgotten, you're just becoming in your soul season. But yeah, this has been episode 3, I think, of soul season. Go slow, go deep, and go with God. I will see you all next week. Love you.